we'll move on to the next case of the morning. Still morning. It's Larry Myrat, or Myrat, or something, versus Matthew Frank.
Myrat, I think.
Myrat. Ms. Pepper?
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Pam Pepper. I'm appearing on behalf of Larry Woodrow Myrat. I'd like to beg the Court's indulgence at the beginning of my argument, if I could, to correct a rather critical error in my brief. I noticed that on page 31 of my brief, when describing the recognizability of the logo on the back of Mr. Myrat's jacket, I stated in a somewhat sarcastic tone that unless one had been living in a cave in the high Himalayas for the last 10 years, they would have to know that the Chicago Bulls are a baseball team.
Good for you.
If you were being generous to me, you would assume that I was trying to be humorous in that sentence.
Well, it's possible. I mean, I've watched the Bulls recently. They could be playing baseball.
That's another way to look at it.
I'm from Indiana. I never heard of them.
I was going to say, I'm correcting the record for Judge Williams and Judge Bauer.
Right. You know,
it's not a Pacers issue. At any rate, I wanted to assure the Court that I do know that the Chicago Bulls play basketball, and the only explanation I can have for that error is that I had baseball caps on the brain due to the facts in this case. Although it was not an issue stated in the presentation of issues, in this matter there was a jurisdictional issue that arose, which obviously the Court is aware of. I addressed it in the jurisdictional section of my brief. Opposing counsel also addressed it, and I think we came to the same conclusions. But before I went into my argument, I simply wanted to inquire whether the Court had any questions about that jurisdictional issue. If not, I'll move on to...
talk about the Rule 58 judgment issue.
Yeah. That's correct, Judge. I think it's pretty clear, but I didn't want to presume. And with that, I would move on to the factual argument. I think at bottom, the factual argument is relatively straightforward here, and it is that, a factual argument. I recognize, to steal Judge Williams' phrase, that Mr. Myrat has a hard row to hoe here to convince this Court that there was ineffective assistance of counsel because of the way that this factual issue was argued. However, I think a review of the record would also indicate to some extent why this issue is a major one to Mr. Myrat. Mr. Myrat sent a letter to me a couple of days before this argument and asked me to emphasize to the Court on his behalf that he was not identified by any victims, that he was not picked out of either the show-up lineup or the actual lineup, and that he has maintained his innocence from the inception of this case to the current date. So in that respect, the factual discrepancies that were noted first by Judge Brennan in her thorough analysis of the facts, and then again as various courts have looked at this, those factual discrepancies are critical in Mr. Myrat's eyes. And it is his view that the appellate counsel that represented him in the state court at the state appellate level could have done and should have done a much stronger job of pointing out those discrepancies and clarifying them for the Court, because it's Mr. Myrat's view that had those discrepancies been pointed out, the result in his case would have been different.
Is there any evidence suggesting that he did or did not have a grayish beard at the time of the arrest?
There's nothing in the record that indicates it, Judge.
And is there any evidence of what his weight and bill was, actually, what it actually was at the time of the arrest?
Not that was presented.
Okay.
Not that was presented.
So that description comparison simply was performed on the basis of his weight and bill 2 years after the arrest?
Correct, at the suppression hearing. And then Judge Brennan noted that a couple of times by saying, I'm making my decision based on what I see now. Obviously the clothing descriptions were a little bit easier to pin down, because the clothing that he was wearing at the time of his arrest was presented as evidence in the courtroom, and the description given by the dispatch was recorded. But for physical purposes, there is no evidence of what he actually looked like at the time that was presented.
So it's the Terry stop, or we'll call it, that is where the line should have been drawn, because once stopped, then they, would they find a receipt or...
Some money and some other items, yes.
Some things that were obviously from the robbery. So it'd have to, identifications notwithstanding, this stop and initial search is the devastating evidence.
Correct, Judge. And this directly flows, the identification issue directly flows to that. The police officer's argument or the police officer's statements were that the basis for their reasonable suspicion for stopping Mr. Myart.
On page 11 of your brief.
Yes, sir.
I read this. The court counted 10 indicia of description from the dispatch. Black male, 40, 6 feet tall, 170 pounds, thin bill, black neck ham, etc. So there was something to do with his size.
There was
6 feet tall, 170, thin build.
Correct. My understanding of Judge Williams' question was whether there was any evidence relating to Mr. Myart's appearance on the day he was arrested. This is the description that the dispatcher gave from the victims who were identifying the robber.
His height fit the description, and then he says he looked like a half fit of the weight description, 170 pounds. And the judge says she couldn't figure out men's weight. But the evidence of it here, but I consider the 150-pound weight to be in the ballpark.
Correct. The victims of the robbery, or at least one of the victims, mm-hmm. described the robber as weighing approximately 170. My read of this was that Judge Brennan was saying, I have a hard time telling what men weigh, but 150, 170, well, somewhere in the neighborhood.
I have a hard time figuring out what women weigh, too, so
don't
it's probably
try.
A gender
That's
thing.
That's right. Don't try.
Don't guess.
You do not want to go there. I think that those discrepancies, particularly I think the build discrepancy, is a significant one because build, in many respects, is an immutable characteristic. Weight, obviously, is not, as many of us know all too well. But build, if one is thin or if one is heavy set or if one is large boned, as we used to say, is not an immutable characteristic and cannot be changed. So while certainly it's arguable that some of these characteristics, that Mr. Myart may not have looked the same at the suppression hearing as the robber on the day of the robbery, there were certainly some characteristics that Judge Brennan could have looked to and distinguished them as being immutable. I see that my white light is on, so unless there are any other questions, I'll reserve the rest of my time.
Okay.
Thank you.
Ms. Hirsch?
May it please the court, I am Cynthia Hirsch. I am an Assistant Attorney General with the State of Wisconsin, and I am here this morning on behalf of the appellee. I also, as the court knows, we also briefed the jurisdiction issue. We reached the same conclusion and believe this court does have jurisdiction, but I would like to first ask if there are any questions on the jurisdiction issue. I presume not, thank you. The very narrow issue before you is whether or not the defendant had effective assistance of counsel on his appeal in state court. While his appeal today is somewhat heartfelt, and we understand his position and perhaps the desperateness with which he pleads here, the real issue is whether or not his attorney, Mr. Cheshire, adequately argued and represented him in the appellate court in the state of Wisconsin. And that standard is clear. It's the Strickland standard. There's a two-pronged test. First, whether or not his representation was effective or deficient. And second, if it was deficient, whether or not that deficiency prejudiced him in any way. We, of course, agree with the district court, who determined that there was no deficient representation by counsel, and even had there been, and we're certainly not conceding that, there was no prejudice. And the reason there was no prejudice is because the state appellate court looked very carefully at the trial record, and the trial court took quite a bit of time during that motion to suppress to analyze all of the issues, went through about 10 factors, and came up with at least 3 factors, possibly 4, in which there was similar characteristics, and determined that the Terry stop, under the totality of circumstances, did meet the Terry test, which is it was reasonable. again, the trial court determined that there was a match with respect to sex, with respect to race, with respect to age, and with respect to height. And I believe that the trial court waffled a little bit on weight, but said that it was in the ballpark. And then the trial court looked at the totality of the circumstances, which the standard does mandate that it do, and given time and place when the stop occurred. It was within 25 minutes and within 5 blocks, I believe, of the robbery which occurred in Milwaukee. Given the totality of the circumstances, the trial court determined that the stop was reasonable. The appellate court went beyond appellate counsel's arguments and looked at the trial court record and determined that even if there had been no ineffective assistance of counsel, the defendant was not prejudiced. I think more importantly, though, that this court has ruled in Dean v. Young that the representation by counsel need not be perfect. In fact, it need not even be very good. It must simply be constitutionally sufficient. And there's no question in this case that counsel's representation of the defendant on appeal in the state court was far more than constitutionally sufficient. He spent at least 6 paragraphs going back over the discrepancies that were argued in front of the trial court, went through each of those factors, talked about the hat and the coat and the build and the weight and the difference in colors. He analyzed those in his brief, and he actually devoted several pages in his brief to this argument, and even appellant concedes that he presented the law correctly and argued the law correctly. For all those reasons, Your Honor, if you have no questions, I'll thank you for your consideration and ask you to affirm the district court's decision.
Thank you. Ms. Pepper? Okay. Thanks very much, you both counsel. Were you appointed?
No.
Okay, I'd like to check just to make sure. All right, well, thanks for your arguments, and please take it under advisement.